wonderful to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. You know, we got these longer days and warmer temperatures. Bet you're happy to be able to get out and get moving. I'm certainly enjoying my time outdoors before, kind of before I get ready to go to work, a nice little 3 or so miles every morning. And maybe you're, maybe you do that as well. Or maybe you're one of those millions of Americans with arthritis who has really problems with just everyday movements, let alone getting out and getting 3 miles in the morning. Great to have you along on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, regardless of what status you're in right now, because we have some help for you. Physical therapists Lori Tyne Brody and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum are with us. They have some great advice to share about getting your body ready for summer activities. And a lot of other, we've got a lot of other important topics to cover as well. Lori is a physical therapist, athletic trainer with UW Sports Medicine and Spine Center. Lori, always great. Thanks for coming by.
It's great to be here on a beautiful day.
Yeah, it's wonderful. Jill Tyne Nissenbaum, associate professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW Madison and a staff physical therapist for UW Athletics and Sports Medicine, and sister to Lori.
Yay. Yep.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Here it comes. Here it comes.
Younger sister.
Yes.
Younger. Oh, yeah. Younger sister.
Yes. Yes. Happy to be here.
Okay. And she just got promoted, too. So she's really, like, loving life now.
Oh, tenured professor now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Congratulations.
It's trouble, man. Trouble with a capital T.
Thank you.
Well, I'll tell you what else is trouble. Arthritis can be trouble for a lot of people. And you just published a paper on arthritis, didn't you?
I did. Yeah. On knee osteoarthritis.
Oh, how perfect. How I'll just sit back and relax.
Yes, as always. Yeah, well, you're the younger one. You have the more energy. So.
And the better knees.
And the better knees. Yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah, I did. It's one of the things that I love talking about because, well, I'm getting older. Mm-hmm. And so are you, just by the way, Jill, just for the record. Just the interesting thing about what happens on a cellular level as we age, and thinking about it as it's applied to our patients and how everybody's a little bit different. People like to think, oh, you have arthritis. Well, everyone has arthritis, and I have arthritis, and she has arthritis, and he has arthritis, and it's all the same, and it is so not the same.
There's
so many variables, particularly when it comes to the knee. What part of the knee? What depth? What breadth? Does it involve the meniscus? Do you have knee instability? Do you have an alignment problem? Do you have a hip problem? Do you have a foot problem? All those things come into play in the clinical decision-making process about what's the right treatment program for you, and what fits one person may be completely inappropriate for the next person, even though they have the same diagnosis.
What is, you know, what is it anyway? Is it just an ache? It's, you know, it's achy. You've got achy muscles, but why do they ache?
Well, that's a really good question. And one of the biggest things I've learned is the caveats about applying the literature on arthritis to any particular patient. Because as people who have arthritis know, you have a good day, then you have a bad day.
Oh.
You have a good week, then you have a bad week. So you can imagine people in a study where you're trying to test an intervention, and maybe they do their intake on a day when they're having a good day, and maybe it just so happens that they're doing their outtake on a day that actually happens to be a bad day. And it really has no relation whatsoever to the intervention that was utilized, but it's the normal fluctuation in that. So, so arthritis is—it's not the normal. It's, some of it is normal wear and tear, but it's generally the breakdown in the articular cartilage, that smooth glistening surface that's like the over the ends of chicken bones, as Dr. Clancy used to always say, that glistening surface, and it breaks down. And actually, that articular cartilage doesn't have a lot of nerve endings that tell you that you've damaged it or it's painful. It isn't until it wears away and you put pressure on your underlying subchondral bone that it starts to talk to you.
Yeah. So.
And the frustrating thing for people is they can't necessarily correlate their pain with an activity. This is the exact same thing I did yesterday, but today my knee hurts, yesterday it didn't. And so that can become very frustrating for people.
Yeah.
And it gets hard to assess the effects of your intervention because you have these normal fluctuations that are not necessarily predictable.
Why did you focus on knees, by the way? Is that just because you like knees?
Well, no. Actually, when I originally wrote the paper, I wrote it more globally about arthritis, but the journal wanted it more focused. So I focused it on knees because...
But yeah, as a general rule, people have a tendency to get arthritis in their lower extremities much more often than their upper extremities. So knees and hips are very, very common joints that experience osteoarthritis because they're weight-bearing. We use them all the time.
Yeah, yeah. And the interesting thing for me is the same principles apply at the spine. I see a lot of spine because I'm in a spine clinic. And the same principles about arthritis and loading and movement and all that apply at the spine, too. People don't think of the spine necessarily as joints, little synovial joints like you have at your knee, but they do indeed have synovial joints.
Now, is there a connection with running, for example, or any? No?
I'm going to say no to that. There's no correlation between running and osteoarthritis. So runners can put tons and tons and tons of mileage on their knees, and they may or may not get arthritis. So there's not a specific correlation with running in and of itself and osteoarthritis. So we don't want to discourage people from running. There's many, many components that go into why someone gets arthritis. If you look at the case of our mother, for example.
Yes, our mother, who was just here.
Yes, she's 80, and she's done everything in her life very symmetrically. She hasn't played a single-sided sport or anything like that, yet she had osteoarthritis or has osteoarthritis in one knee and not the other. So why is that?
Well, probably because she broke her pelvis.
Yes. And so she probably has some alignment issues with her knee. And so that's probably what caused her to get arthritis in one knee. And she ultimately ended up and got a total knee replacement last October.
Mm-hmm.
And she didn't get it on the other side. So so what is that straw that tips the camel's back? There's so many variables.
Right. And when they do the research on it, you know, they say, oh, well, look at these people. They're in their 70s and they're still running and they have no more arthritis than other people. Well, the people whose knees didn't tolerate arthritis have already self-selected themselves out.
Right.
So on the other side of it, once you are diagnosed and we have imaging and we can look at your alignment, your strength, your mobility and all those things, we can make a recommendation about whether or not we think you should continue to run given that state. But on the front end of it, people shouldn't say, oh, I'm not going to run because I might get arthritis.
Right. There we go. And we have questions about arthritis from folks on our audience here. So let's go to Nancy in Grafton. Nancy, hi. Thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, I could be right with their mother there. My meniscus blew out when I was on the job taking care of a lady older than me. And anyway, they went in the surgery. First, they tried a little therapy. That didn't do any good. So then they did some surgery and cleaned out that meniscus, and they put some new concrete in my knee. And so then I had some oral cortisone, and then they put some of that Syndesc or whatever it is.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's just, I'm just going to therapy. And this happened back in January when it happened. And how the heck long should I put up with the pain in the knee? Can't kneel on the knee or anything before I go and have a knee replacement like my husband did quite a few years ago. Both of them at the same time. 2 weeks later, he's climbing the ladders, taking the leaves out of the eave trough.
When did they put the Synvisc in?
When did they do this?
Yeah.
About 3 weeks ago.
And did you have a series of Synvisc injections?
Well, they told me that you can't have that. There's a period of time in between.
Right.
That
mm-hmm.
you can have those Syndesc injections.
That's correct.
Now, Larry had some of those, and they work for you.
Yeah, but it took a while. You see, that was the thing. I was almost, in fact, I had scheduled a surgery because 12 weeks had gone by or so. And then, you know, I noticed I was feeling a little better, and I wound up canceling the surgery. And am I ever glad I did, because I have virtually no pain.
Yeah. Well, so there you have it. So I'd wait it out a bit more. Okay. First of all, because they've changed, they took out some of the meniscus.
Yes.
And it's, and so it changes the mechanics of your knee. And it takes a while for your knee to readjust to the new mechanical alignment. And whether or not your knee tolerates that change takes some time to sort out. It may tolerate it if you give it enough time, you know. And if you're waiting, you know, 6-8 months and you're still having as much pain, then it tells you your knee is not. Now, are you in some physical therapy?
Yes.
Okay. Are you doing stuff on land? Are you doing stuff in the water?
Oh, heck no. Just, I don't, there's no water around here to go. No, actually, it's just, it's, and he gives me exercises I have to do at home. Yeah.
Okay.
Sure.
Definitely stick with those. I think that's really important to keep that variable going. So I think it's really important to stick with that. And a lot of people think, oh my goodness, why should I do these exercises if I'm just going to go on and have a total knee replacement anyway? Does that sound like our mom, Lori?
Oh, geez.
So, but I'll tell you, if this doesn't work for you and you end up having some sort of other surgical intervention, you will just be so much farther ahead of the game postoperatively if you go in there with nice, strong muscles and good range of motion. So don't think that this is, as my mom would say, all for naught.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. And the other really important thing about the exercise is people say, how can exercise change arthritis? Mm-hmm. It's just so important. Every time you take a step in your knee, 2 to 3 times your body weight, depending upon how hard you hit the ground when you step. And so your muscles, your quadriceps, and your hip muscles are the best shock absorbers that you have. So if they are functioning, if they're strong and they're functioning well, they can absorb about 60% of the force with which you hit the ground. If you have wimpy muscles, then all that load gets placed on your joint, and your joint will wear out faster.
There you go. Good luck, and wait for that Synvisc to, mm-hmm. take effect.
Absolutely.
Voice of experience here. Mm-hmm. Thanks, Nancy. Connie in Portage, it's your turn. Hi, Connie.
Hi. I have a question. I've broken both feet and both legs, and when they did surgery and put a rod down one, and they said I had osteoporosis. Well, my sister's tiny. She has that. I went and had my hips done later, and they said, no, there's no sign of it. Now, can you have that in one part of your body and not in the other?
Are you, osteoarthritis or osteoporosis?
No, porosis.
Osteoporosis, weakness of your bones?
Can you have that in your feet and legs and not in your hip bones or your arms?
Well, yeah. Yes, you can. Yeah. And if you have a rod in one of your legs, you can actually get what's called bone shadowing, where you will become a little osteoporotic around the rod that's in your leg because the bone thinks, oh, I don't have to work so hard because there's a rod here. And so you can become osteoporotic definitely around the rod that's in your leg.
So, no, they took the rod and the plates and screws out a year later.
Oh, good.
Yeah,
okay.
But at the time he did that surgery, he said he couldn't even get the screws in my foot because my bones crumbled. But then when I went and by my doctor's order, you know, I had the x-ray done of my hip bones, which you usually do, they were fine.
You can have different levels of osteoporosis in different parts of your body. So the answer to that is yes. And the answer is also true for osteoarthritis. So I'm guessing maybe you had a bone scan or something also to check for osteoporosis.
Right.
But yes, yeah. Yes, you can definitely have different. Much of it depends upon your lifestyle and how you used your body. You will have different parts of your body that are loaded more depending upon your lifetime activity levels.
There you go.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling, Connie. Appreciate it. You can join in, too. We've been zeroing in a bit on arthritis, but we'll deal with any ache or pain or sprain or strain as we visit with our two guests today, Jill Tyne-Nissenbaum and Lori Tyne-Brody. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. Or post on our Facebook page. Just go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page for that. I'm Larry Mueller. Cheyenne Lentz, our on-air producer, here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Right now, continuing our conversation with physical therapist Jill Tyne-Nissenbaum and Lori Tyne-Brody, Again, the number to call, 800-642-1234, or post on our Facebook page. Just go to the Larry Mueller Show for that, and we'd certainly love to hear from you. Tom and Kimberly has a question, so let's go to Tom. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure, what's on your mind?
I broke my elbow in two places about 10 years ago. I had a car cut me off while I was on my bicycle, and I went over the handlebars and stuck my arm out to brace myself, and it jammed my arm and broke my elbow. And I had went through physical therapy for them to help me get my mobility back in my arm, which I never got completely. But it's been fine all this time. Up until recently, it's starting to hurt me. There's a lot of pain in my elbow. And I'm wondering, is that something I'm just going to have to live with? Am I getting arthritis in there? Is that something I should have checked out?
Well, those are very good questions. And the elbow, interestingly, is one of the most congruent joints in the body. So when you do experience some sort of injury there and you're immobilized, which I'm sure you were, it's a really tough joint to get your range of motion back. So what you had mentioned is that you didn't quite fully get your range of motion back. That, unfortunately, is not that uncommon. It's a really, it can become a really stiff joint very, very quickly. Having said that, the fact that you're having a little bit more pain now, I think the first couple things that come to my mind, and older sister, feel free to chime in.
Oh, thank you.
are you continuing to do some sort of strength training and keep the muscles around the joint nice and strong? And are you continuing to make sure you have really good mobility in the elbow?
Yeah. Yeah, I lift weights. I work out 4 or 5 times a week.
Okay.
You know, I can do like curling with dumbbells and stuff like that, and that really doesn't cause me problems. But for instance, if I'm laying on the couch and I'm just sitting with my arm not moving, it'll get really stiff and it's really hard to move and it's painful to move.
Okay. Yeah, so that's kind of a classic symptom of arthritis, is when you stop moving it. So classically, it's first thing in the morning, you get out of bed and you feel really stiff and it takes a little while to get your joint moving again. That is a common arthritis complaint, although it doesn't necessarily mean that that's what's going on in your elbow. But I think it would be worthwhile having it looked at. You know, it's been 10 years since that accident. And I think just having it checked out, if you said, oh, I wasn't doing any kind of strengthening and I sling a hammer with it all day, then I might think a different direction. But given that you've been continuing to work it and now you're getting symptoms without any other known change, I'd go in and have it looked at, and so you know what you're dealing with before you move on to whatever's the next step.
You didn't crack your helmet, did you?
Nope, just the elbow.
Well,
you described perfectly what happened to me about 10 years ago, and I cracked my elbow, but I also broke my helmet in half.
Oh, yikes.
Which, not quite in half, but it was when you go over your handlebars and land on your elbow and your head.
Yeah, that's frightening.
It is.
That's
very frightening. And I'm lucky because I landed more on my head than my elbow.
Yeah.
my elbow is fine.
Yeah, but Jill's right. Elbows, when they're stiff, are hard to get all the way straight. So I'd go have it looked at, and that way you can get the appropriate direction for you.
Is it something that they could identify with X-ray, or would that be an MRI?
Yeah, nope. Yeah. They should be able to identify what's going on with an X-ray and a clinical exam.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right, thank you very much.
All right,
yeah,
you bet.
Good luck, Tom. Appreciate the call. Yeah, that was not a fun... I know exactly how he felt. Mary in Chippewa, it's your turn. Hi, Mary. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I have a hard time swallowing, and they took X-rays and MRI and whatever, and they said I have arthritis in my neck. And it feels like stuff is caught in there. I'm just wondering if there's anything I can do for that.
So you've entered the medical system and they've checked everything out, and they're saying this difficulty with swallowing is due to arthritis in your neck?
Yep.
Okay.
I got arthritis in my neck. The difficult in swallowing, they're doing acid reflux treatment on me now. I've been on that for a couple months.
All right. Have you seen a physical therapist at all?
Yep, I went to physical therapy for about a year. I was in a car accident probably about 5 years ago.
Okay. So, but did you see them specifically for this neck problem that you currently have?
Well, it was my neck and shoulder that was hurting.
Okay. And that was how long ago?
About 5 years ago.
Well, it might be time to go back and look again because everything is now 5 years older. And, you know, what you were doing then was probably appropriate for your physical condition at that point in time. But my sense is things have changed since then. So I think it'd be worthwhile to go back and be reassessed, see where you're at, looking at your head and neck posture to see if there's a different intervention that would work for you now, given your current physical state and the new information you have with your MRI and so on. Mm-hmm. So it seems like the first time it was more or less dealing with the acute and subacute effects of the car accident. And now you have a different set of conditions that, you know, maybe the sequelae of the car accident,
right.
But it's different. Does that make sense, Mary?
Okay. Yeah, the neck was hurting back then too, but
right. But the pathology or the condition of your neck may have changed since 5 years ago, and so there may be different treatment strategies or different interventions they can do now that would be appropriate for the way your neck is now as compared to what it was 5 years ago.
So, yeah, they may want to look at your head and neck posture and give you some new exercises. If your neck has become stiffer than it was 5 years ago, they may want to do some mobilization in your upper back to try to steal some extra motion from elsewhere in your spine if it can't be achieved at your neck, things like that.
There you go.
Okay, no home remedies, though, huh?
Home remedies? You know, I'd say given that you were in a car accident and in therapy for a year, I'd be reluctant to make recommendations without having a closer look at the pathology in your neck, and especially with your swelling difficulties. Those are levels of complexity that shouldn't be handled over the radio, I think.
I agree.
Probably need to have somebody somebody look.
Yeah.
I agree.
And good luck. Thanks, Mary. Appreciate your call very much. Wendy in Reedsburg up next. Wendy, hi. Thank you for calling.
Thank you so much. I fell about 25 years ago and damaged the patella on my right leg, and I currently have degenerative joint disease in both of my knees. And when I damaged that patella, it turned out that it turned into avascular necrosis, and they had to take out about half of my patella.
Oh.
Yeah, and so now, many, many years later, I probably need a new joint, but they won't put one in because he says there's not enough patella in order to do it. So I'm trying to figure out a way to relieve the pain because they're not going to put a joint in there.
Well, it's very tricky that you have part of your patella removed because that really helps with kind of how our quadriceps gives our quadriceps a better advantage in how we use our knee. And typically,
right. Yeah. And I get mechanical advantage. And I've worked really hard over the years not to favor that knee.
That's great.
And except when I'm climbing upstairs with a load, mm-hmm. I generally climb upstairs evenly and all that stuff.
Okay. So it sounds like you're doing a lot of things right. Are you currently in physical therapy?
I am not.
Okay. It may be worth just seeing if there are other modifications you can do or other muscles you can strengthen around the knee that could help compensate for this, because it sounds like you're not a candidate for a total knee. And have you gone down the path of a Synvisc injection or anything like that? Have you talked to your physician? Is that an option for you?
I have had some of those injections, but, you know, I was listening to you talk to an earlier person, and I wasn't getting them as regularly as I should, so maybe that's one thing I need to do.
I think
I got a shot of cortisone the last time I went to see him.
So are you doing, like, anything in the water? Have you
Not
tried
during
that?
The winter, but during the summer I do.
Okay, and how does your knee feel then?
Not significantly different.
Okay. All right. And you think it's the weight-bearing portion, it's the tibiofemoral portion that's giving you trouble, or is it the patellofemoral portion?
I think it's the weight-bearing because I am overweight.
Weight. Okay. Well, you know, that's an important strategy is dealing with that, although it gets difficult if you can't exercise because of the pain. So that's sometimes where the pool comes in. Even though you may not feel a whole lot better in terms of your knee, it does give you a place where you can exercise relatively vigorously to help maintain body weight, which would be key. And if you don't have strengthening exercises for your hips and core, that would be really good too.
I don't. That's a great idea.
Yeah. Because good glute muscles can unload the knee.
Thanks, Wendy.
Okay.
Good luck.
Thank you.
Appreciate the call very much. You can join in, too. Finally have an open line for you at 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. Chris in Wisconsin Dells, you're next. Hi, thanks for calling.
Hi, I have two different kinds of arthritis, and I want you to talk a little bit about the fact that they're not really related to each other. I have a hip deformity, and I was nailed to a board for most of my childhood, which is like torturous, and it screwed up all the joints in my legs. So I have pieces of cartilage floating around that on occasion tend to walk themselves out underneath the tendon, which hobbles me. But that's nothing compared to the fact that I have fibromyalgia. And this is an all-over horrible body disease that is just painful as heck, and there isn't anything that they can do for it. But I've been doing a lot of research into diet stuff, and if you could talk a little bit about that, and I want to make some recommendations for people that have both kinds of arthritis, because you can ameliorate some of the inflammation in your body by what you eat. And you really, really have to get down to the nitty-gritty here, which is take all the grains out of your diet and take ginger and turmeric, and there are some other things. You can go on the internet. There's all kinds of supplements and stuff that you can take. Or look up a fibromyalgia website, and there are all kinds of things that you can take that are available on the grocery shelves.
So this is fibromyalgia is not an osteoarthritis issue. There are different categories of arthritis, and fibromyalgia doesn't actually fit into any of the arthritis categories.
Where does it fit?
That's a good question.
That's a great question.
It kind of falls in the category of pain, like a myofascial pain.
Okay.
And they're not certain of the origin of it at this point in time. But there are many people who do well with changes in their diet and lifestyle. So reducing inflammatory producing kinds of food, like a lot of dairy, gets to get cut out. Yes, a lot of sugar.
Highly processed food.
Yes, eating lower on the food chain, especially vitamin E, some vitamin D have been shown. Many people talk of the benefits of turmeric. Mm-hmm. But it's no one's going to study turmeric because there's no financial gain from pharmaceutical perspective. So, much of the information is anecdotal. We kind of go back to our opening statements that it's very individualized. Some people respond remarkably to those kinds of interventions. I've seen people with fibromyalgia who respond to deep myofascial work or craniosacral work, or some people, actually the literature would support aquatic exercise probably as one of the number one interventions for fibromyalgia. So,
absolutely, but I do think diet can certainly play a role, and teasing those things out, as Lori said, because there are so many variables, becomes really complicated. So you have to kind of make yourself your own little single subject study and kind of keep everything else the same and just change kind of one variable at a time, whether it be diet, whether it be adding turmeric or something like that. And the one thing I do want to mention is if you're on medication from your physician, before you start a supplement of some sort, you should really check to make sure that there isn't some sort of negative
interactions
with the supplement. Yeah. And the prescription medication.
Yeah,
and it sounds like that's what Chris has done, is kind of sorted out what's going to work for her.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Chris, thanks a lot for calling. I appreciate your call very much. Sarah in Brookfield, we will give you a chance right now. Hi, Sarah.
Hi. Oh, I'm taking you off speaker. I'm sorry.
Oh, that's okay. How can we help?
I have a couple of questions. I am actually a therapist myself. But I am a director, so I don't work as hard as I used to, and I'm in my late 50s, and I recently started taking up Taekwondo. And one of the movements they have us do, and I do have arthritis in my cervical area, they have us do neck rotations. I don't do those. I do the forward and side flexion and extension. And because I'm not comfortable with the rotation, I'm wondering, am I wrong on not doing that?
So
I'm thinking that joint would do better on side to side and forward and back rather than they do circular rotation. So I'm a little concerned about, you know, tearing and compressions and things like that. But also, I'm on the side about the neck of the femur on both sides of my hip. It's tender, and I have trouble sleeping on my sides now. And I'm thinking I'm getting a little tendinitis in it, and will that ever go away just because I, you know, the side kicks and the repetition and the high energy, and I'm not in good alignment because my balance is not what it should be yet.
Yeah.
So it sounds like, well, I'm going to start with the hip because that's where you left off. So you're basically starting a new activity,
right?
That has a lot of hip movement, a lot of kicking, and a change in speed. So you have a change in probably the frequency of your activity, the range that you're working in, and the speed
right.
that you're working with,
right.
and the repetitions.
And I have very poor flexibility and balance because, of course, I haven't done this.
Right.
And it is high intensity, but I have always, for the last couple of years, I've had tenderness and difficulty sleeping on one side just because of that hip. I think I've had an iliopsoas problem in the past. It's just that side hip, I think, where that the tensor fasciae hits about there.
Mm-hmm.
I'm afraid to go have it looked at because I don't want anybody to tell me I need a hip replacement.
It doesn't sound like that at all. So hip arthritis will tend to hurt in your groin.
Very deep.
Yeah. It's a deep achy. It's not, and it isn't so bad when you sleep on that side. That's more of a symptom of either a trochanteric bursitis, or sometimes you have a gluteus medius tendonitis right behind your trochanter. So if you poke around there, if it's right on the outside where you put your hands you palpate it right on the outside on that bone, that's tends to be trochanteric bursitis. And if you go right around behind it, kind of dig in there, that tends to be some gluteus medius tendonitis, and could be either of those. But go have it looked at. And if you're having trouble on one side versus the other, then I go back to, okay, do you have an SI joint? Do you have a pelvic obliquity? Do you have a leg length difference that's causing one side to be symptomatic and not the other?
Mm-hmm.
Something like that needs to be fixed.
Good.
The other thing we encourage people to do many times is make sure that when you sleep that you are in good pelvic alignment. So we encourage people to sleep with a pillow between their knees. And if you have a wider pelvis and a narrower waist, unlike me, some people actually need to put a pillow under their waist. Otherwise, they kind of fall into mm-hmm. side bending. So mm-hmm. both of those things would be things I would encourage you to try. And sometimes they're a little hard to get used to, but once you get used to them, you'll realize you can't sleep without them.
Yeah.
Now, regards to the neck and the whole neck circling thing, when you do get back in those kind of end quadrants, it does cause some compression in the area where your nerve roots come out or where your nerves come out. So I guess I would say I wouldn't go to extreme ranges with them. If you want to do small little rotations and stay within a very comfortable range, I think that's okay. But what that basically is just combining all the motions that you're doing in isolation. So if you're doing flexion and extension and side bending, and looking over either shoulder to do your warm-up or stretches, that's great. The rotation just kind of combines all those motions.
Yeah, and it's one of those things, again, where, I mean, there are a few things in life where you have absolutes, but a lot of times it's individual. So I wouldn't say absolutely never do this or never do that. Although I do say some of those things to my kids at times, but in general, in terms of exercise,
right.
you know, it has to be individual. If you become symptomatic when you get back in that postural lateral quadrant, then don't do that.
There you go. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling, Sarah. Appreciate it. And Jerome in Mequon, your turn. Hi, Jerome.
Yes. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
As people age, some of them start slouching forward, almost like a hunchback approach. Is there some physical therapy to protect against that?
Absolutely. That's a lot of that is postural related, and it can be related to osteoporosis. So if you think about our entire life or everything we do, it kind of encourages us to bring our head and neck forward. We look down at our computers. We look down at our cell phones. We type all day at our computer, and it encourages our body to come in this horrible posture. So the fact that you're aware of it now and can kind of overcome that is great. There are very simple postural corrections you can do.
Yeah, we tend to focus on stretching the stuff in the chest and the front. So sometimes we'll have people stand in a corner with their elbows and shoulders at 90 degree and kind of lean in to do a corner stretch. Sometimes if people can get up and down off the floor, we'll have them lie on their back and just bring their arms straight out to the side. For some people, that's enough of a stretch. Otherwise, you can get a foam roller, or my favorite is the pool noodle that's cut in about a third, and you can place it down the length of your spine in your back and then just lay backwards. Or you can roll up a small hand towel and put it down the length of your spine and just lay on your back and open up your chest, and that will stretch your spine the other direction, avoiding the hunch. And then we do strengthening exercises for your upper back and the back of your neck to encourage you to stand up straight.
The other thing you can do is if you're seated a lot for work or activity, we encourage people to start with a lumbar roll, a roll in their low back. Because if you put a roll in your low back and kind of start at your pelvis, it basically forces your entire spine to be stacked up appropriately.
So what do you mean? You put something...
Like the towel roll or the horizontal roll.
Okay, you can stick it down by the chair or the bottom of the...
back of the chair. And that, and if you shimmy your little
butt around
way back, and that it will force you to sit upright, and it puts your entire spine in an upright posture. So interestingly, sometimes when people come in with neck and shoulder pain, we give them this towel roll or this lumbar roll, and you have to explain what the purpose is, and most people feel it's helpful.
Yeah, there we go. Thanks a lot for calling, Jerome. Appreciate your call. Good luck with that. We are talking about all kinds of aches and pains, zeroed in a bit on arthritis and knee arthritis with Jill Titan-Nissenbaum, who is an associate professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW-Madison, and Lori Tan Brody, physical therapist, athletic trainer with the UW Sports Medicine and Spine Center. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you along on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio as we take a look at dealing with knee arthritis, other kinds of arthritis, and other aches and pains with our two guests, Jill Titan-Nissenbaum and Lori Titan-Brody. Janet in Marshfield has a question next. Janet, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have bilateral knee pain, and it's about the same on both. I had the Synovus injections on the left knee, like the end of December, and I'm going to have them in the right knee towards the end of June. But I also have a toe that's been operated on twice, my second toe on the right foot. So I'm wondering if the knee pain is as bad as it is because I'm walking goofy because my foot hurts.
Yeah.
And that would throw my whole pelvis off, or if it's not really related. And the other question I had is I keep having x-rays for things, and they say I'm bone on bone. But I had a bone scan last week, and it was normal.
Okay, so I'll handle the second question first, and I'll let Lori handle the first question. she can remember that long.
Oh, nice.
So you had x-rays taken, and they said they were bone on bone. So what that's looking at is that's actually looking at your joint space. And that's kind of indicative of arthritis, okay? When you lose that joint space, you have that joint space narrowing where you have bone on bone. That implies arthritis. When you have a bone scan done, that's actually looking at your bone mineral density and looking to see if you have osteopenia or osteoporosis. So those are looking at two very different things. So the fact that you had a scan done, a bone mineral density scan done, and your scan was normal is great. That means you have good bone density.
Interestingly, people who have osteoarthritis and osteoporosis don't coexist a lot because as your joint surfaces wear away, you load your bone more. So people who have osteoarthritis tend not to be osteoporotic unless they were osteoporotic first. In terms of the question about your toe and you're walking funny on your toe, it certainly is possible that it accelerated your arthritis? You know, you have arthritis in both of your knees, so mm-hmm. and you only injured the one side. So, you know, walking funny can always irritate a joint. So for people who have had multiple surgeries, you know, who are in car accidents, who had mm-hmm. nerve problems or whatever, and who walked abnormally for long periods of time, certainly that will contribute to arthritis. For people who have a short-term injury, not necessarily unless the stage has already been set for arthritis, and that is if you're already on the cusp of mm-hmm. becoming symptomatic from your arthritis, then the surgery and the change in your gait can be enough to tip the scales, or it can be the straw that broke the camel's back. Mm-hmm. But in terms of looking at that relationship, it'd be hard to sort out at
okay,
this point.
Because, it's been about a year and a half that I've had two surgeries on them, both of them failed, and I walk on the outside of my right foot, so that toe doesn't get touched because it sticks way up in the air, and my big toe and third toe go underneath it to have fun. Mm-hmm. And so I know I'm walking off on that shoe.
So do you use an assistive device, like a cane or anything?
No.
Okay.
Well, if you're walking abnormally, you know, having a physical therapist look at how you walk and make a recommendation for some sort of assistive device, whether it's a walking stick or something, mm-hmm. not necessarily for every day around your house, but if you're walking longer distances, mm-hmm. that can stabilize and normalize your gait enough where it could keep you from becoming so symptomatic.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
All right. Good luck. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate it. We had an email from Gary in Clam Lake who says, my wife has osteoarthritis in her finger joints, all the fingers except the one with the wedding ring. It has no arthritis. Is there a cause and effect here, or what do you think could be going on?
Well, I can answer that probably very loosely, just because I take piano lessons, and I've learned a lot about finger strength from my piano teacher. And one of the things that I've learned is that we use our ring finger of all of our fingers the least.
Look at that.
Yeah, and it's our weakest finger. And so that's the reason I play the piano poorly.
Okay.
but that may be part of it. It may just be how her hand functions, that she's using her other digits more often, and that may be enough to keep that ring finger a little bit more pristine.
Yeah, I don't know that it has anything to do with potentially wearing a ring or the metal or anything like that on it. And he did say osteoarthritis. It's not terribly common to have osteoarthritis in all the joints of your fingers. There are some joints that are more prone than others, but it is possible. Rheumatoid arthritis tends to affect a lot of the finger joints. But it may be that his wife was in some kind of occupation where she really used her hands a lot.
Mm-hmm. What about this whole business of, I mean, you see, still see these ads all the time for wearing a copper bracelet or...
Yeah, well, there's no science to support that. So, and again, it goes back to the individual. Sometimes the individual believes that if I take this supplement, I feel better, then great. There's a lot we know about the body, but there's a whole lot that we don't. So I'd say if you think that helps you, then go for it.
Right, and I can't imagine there are any risks to wearing a copper bracelet.
Right.
So you have to consider the cost-benefit ratio.
Yeah.
Kathy in Appleton, it's your turn. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry and Lori, and I'm sorry I tuned in late, and your other guest.
Jill.
It's all right, I'm the younger sister.
The younger sister, yes.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
In a nutshell, because it is a very long story, 6 shoulder surgeries resulted in 2008 was the original rotator cuff tear. That resulted in a total reverse joint replacement in 2011, where unfortunately the axillary nerve was damaged, never recovered. There is no deltoid muscle remaining. There is no external rotation. My arm does not lift to even 30 degrees in front of me.
Right.
The pain is at an extreme level, and that's being treated as best as possible, including recently an intrathecal pump, not very effective, unfortunately. But my question is, recently I've noticed what seems to be perhaps inflammation causing things like all the joints in my hands changing to the point that none of my rings fit, a 10-pound weight gain with no apparent cause for that. Didn't start eating bowls of ice cream at night or anything. But,
no.
I don't understand that, and I don't understand what could be inflammation going on in the body because of all this. When I sleep, I do not move. I wake up in exactly the same position that I laid down in perhaps 4 to 5 hours later until pain wakes me.
Okay.
Right. So,
any comments about any of this?
Yes.
So,
Jill, go ahead.
So, unfortunately, Lori and I both looked at each other and kind of just shook our head when you gave us your very long history. That's a very tough outcome, and it sounds like you're managing as best you can under these circumstances. When you mentioned the kind of swelling and inflammation in your joints, we both thought immediately of your lymph node system and a condition called lymphedema. You have a chain of lymph nodes that sits very, very close in your axilla or your armpit, and with some of the changes that have occurred in your shoulder, I'm wondering if they're getting blocked or compressed or a little occluded, where you're getting a lot of edema down in your hand and there's not adequate drainage coming up. And so that's something you can easily see. There are physical therapists who specialize in lymphedema, and that would be the individual I would encourage you to see.
Right. Agreed. And that would account for the weight gain, because you have a fluid weight gain in your arm or in your lymph system. So, and that should be dealt with.
Yes.
Then how do I go about finding someone who, a PT who specializes in lymphedema?
Well, I'd probably start with the physician. The therapists that work most with it work in breast cancer, because when they do lymph node dissection, lymphedema in the arm is a common sequelae of surgery for breast cancer. So you could even go to the local hospital, the breast cancer center, and ask who they would recommend for the treatment of lymphedema.
So there is a little bit of hope. And you said
there are very certain compression garments they can provide you, and there's very specific kind of massage that they do.
Yep.
So, yes, I would absolutely look for somebody.
Yeah, they work to increase the lymph flow out of your arm. Yeah, so there are people who are specially trained and certified in that.
And you live in a big enough area, I'm sure you could find someone.
Yeah.
Oh, you have given me some hope. Maybe that will even address even a small amount of the pain.
Right.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, absolutely. It certainly could.
Yeah. Good luck, Kathy.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks so much.
Calling.
And Bonnie in Fitchburg, hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, thanks for having me on. I am an older woman, and I am beginning to shrink a bit. And my yoga instructor suggested one of those slings that you hang upside down on, you know, for 5 minutes a day or so. And I'm just wondering if it's worth the investment of the money to do that. Would it help?
Would it help with your shrinking?
Would it help? Yeah, would it help, like, to relieve the compression?
Yes. So, as long as you don't have no contraindications to it. So one of the things you worry about is the increased blood pressure in your eyes and in your head. So you're going to have an increased blood flow, increased pressure. So so making sure that you're otherwise healthy, you might want to run the question past your primary care physician to see if he or she has any concerns about your hanging upside down. I know in our facility we have an inversion table, and we've got another device where you can hang upside down. If you belong to a gym, it might be a place you could try it out before you invested in it, and to see what about it works for you or doesn't work for you before you purchase a device.
I agree.
Okay.
And the other thing about unweighting is, depending upon what part of your body you want to unweight, is you can get in a pool. A pool will unweight you, unweight all your joints however deep you are down. And as Jill did her little snorkel here, if you want to go underwater with a snorkel, you can work it all the way up to your head.
So yeah, I think there's a couple options to unload you, and you just need to find what's best for you.
Yeah, what works for your lifestyle.
Yeah.
Okay. Great. Thank you.
Yep.
Thanks, Bonnie. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Diane emailed and has sciatica with pain down the left buttock to upper thigh. Goes away when she's active, but quickly returns when she sits, which gets frightening. I stretch, use cold and hot packs. I sit in a hard chair, but nothing seems to help. I've not seen a physical therapist. Could you give me some advice?
Yes. See a physical therapist.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're getting symptoms when you sit, you know, immediately, that needs to be dealt with. There are a series of specific exercises that a physical therapist can give her that will help get those symptoms up out of her leg. She may or may not, it may or may not be appropriate for her to be stretching. Sometimes if you have sciatica and you continue to stretch, all it does is annoy the nerve. So I know it feels good. It feels like you want to stretch, but when you stretch it, you aggravate the condition. So she needs to see a physical therapist who can examine her and figure out what she should be doing to help get these symptoms out. Because the longer those symptoms remain, the harder they are going to be to get rid of and the more likely they will be to come back.
So always better to go quicker than later.
Well, you know, sometimes it makes sense to see if you can manage it yourself, if it seems to be a simple problem and it's getting better and it's responding to the things that you're doing. But it doesn't sound like that from Diane.
No.
It sounds like she's pretty anxious about it. So
we are talking today about all those aches and pains, zeroing in a bit on arthritis today with Jill Tyne-Nissenbaum and Lori Tyne-Brody. Great to have both of them with us, and they'll be here right up until 12:30 today. We'll take a look at the news and weather, and then we'll be back with our guests. Stay with us. Nothing can ruin fun activities more than a sore back or maybe painful muscles, and once a month, we are lucky to have people with us who know a lot about staying in good shape and kind of getting rid of those sore backs and those painful muscles. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along on the Ideas Network, and great to have Jill Tyne-Nissenbaum, Associate Professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW, and a staff physical therapist, as a matter of fact, for UW Athletics and Badger Sports Medicine. And
go Bucky.
Jill, thank you. Thank you so much for being with us.
It's a lot of fun.
Lori Tyne-Brody, physical therapist, athletic trainer with the UW Sports Medicine and Spine Center. She's also the grad program director for Rocky Mountain University Health Professionals in Provo, Utah.
Yay.
Yay. What are they the Provo Utes or the Provo...
No, you know, there are a bunch of health professionals, so they're physical therapists. There is no sports team.
There's no mascot there.
No, there's no mascot. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, there are probably some aches and pains out there, just like there are here. If you have an ache or pain as you listen in and would like to join us, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Kurt's been waiting a while from Lancaster. Hi, Kurt. Thank you for waiting.
Hey, thank you. Appreciate your time.
Sure.
I've had a very recalcitrant overuse injury in my quad tendon, diagnosed as tendinopathy for probably going on a couple of years now. I went and saw, I've seen multiple doctors on it, but per their recommendations, I took probably a year off of all impact exercises, and then along with I did PT for probably about 4 months, and that helped a little, but there's still definite substantial pain preventing me from really kind of living the active lifestyle I want. Just curious if you guys had any recommendations in terms of kind of just overall tendon health.
Yeah, okay.
Absolutely. There's a couple of things. It sounds like you've done a lot to manage it. You've rested it. You've done some exercises. One of the best types of exercises you can do with people with tendinopathy, and thank you for using that right word.
Mm-hmm. And he used recalcitrant, too.
He did. He used great big words.
I heard that. I was like, recalcitrant.
Multisyllabic.
Yeah.
Great. But tendinopathy is a great term to use because tendonitis many times implies inflammation, and a lot of times there's not inflammation. So we do have a tendency to call it tendinopathy. But eccentric exercise is a very specific exercise for people who have tendinopathy, and you'd mentioned that you had done physical therapy for about 4 months, but I'm not sure how much of that was an eccentric type of contraction.
Did you do eccentrics?
Yep, they had me doing eccentric stuff along with like wedged squats and
okay. Oh yeah, great. Oh yeah, wonderful.
Like that, so.
Mm-hmm. And this is your quad
and it
tendon.
Did seem to help. Yeah, but again, it's, you know, anytime I try to work out, you know, intensely again, it definitely the pain is still there. And I guess one more thing to mention, I also did have probably going on a couple months now. I guess you'd call it a debridement therapy type thing where they go in. It's kind of like a needling procedure where they go in and kind of clean up the tendon area. And that was about 3 months ago, and that almost seemed to make it worse. So.
Did they find pathology in the tendon? And this is your quad tendon, not your patellar tendon.
Correct. So, yeah, that was another kind of strange, or not strange thing, but a less common issue that they were. They had done this therapy a lot on patellar tendon work, but with respect to quads tendon, there really wasn't a whole lot of cases similar to mine. So,
did they find pathology in there when they went in?
So when they I guess it was all guided by ultrasound.
Right.
They found calcium deposits and I guess micro tears within the tendon. So.
So have you had any other kind of interventions?
Nope. Aside from the PT, the rest, and then the 10X is what the procedure was called. I guess the clinical name for it was fast, focused aspiration of scar tissue.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yep. Another option for you may be platelet-rich plasma or something called
I've definitely looked into that, yep.
Okay. You would probably be a candidate for it. What platelet-rich plasma is, they draw some of your blood and they spin it and they take the they take the platelet-rich part and they re-inject it into the area to kind of create first an inflammatory process, and then it lays down, it promotes healing. So it may be worth looking into, see if you're a candidate for that. I see you're from an area that probably doesn't have a physician in the area that does it, but there's
The closest would probably be either Madison or
right,
Mayo.
Right. There's some
I guess your guys' thoughts on the I don't know, say efficacy of that.
A PRP?
In terms of working, yeah. I've heard mixed results from various guys I've gone to. They, I've heard some say, it'll probably work, and then a lot of guys, say, you probably got a 50% chance of helping you out, so...
Yeah, that's a great question, and I don't know how much research has been done. They've done some kind of tendon-specific areas, and honestly, because you do have a quad tendon versus a patellar tendon, as you mentioned, it is a little unusual, and I'm not sure how much research is out there, particularly on the quad tendon. I would say in the patellar tendon, anecdotally from my experience working with our physicians here in Madison, we've had some pretty good luck with it.
What started this off in the first place?
It was solely my fault. I'm the only one to blame. Started off, I'm sure, as tendonitis, and then, just kept working through the pain. Just, I love triathlons. I love weightlifting. Very active lifestyle. Pushing it too far, I'm sure it put it over the edge until I got to the point that it was just very limiting with respect to the exercise I enjoy doing. So.
And any idea why one leg and not the other? Because in most of those things, your legs are doing the same thing.
I'm sorry. It is both of them.
Oh, it's both?
Yep.
Jeez Louise.
Sorry about that.
Okay.
Yep.
All right.
I would definitely look into the PRP thing.
I would definitely investigate PRP. To the best of my knowledge, there are no negative side effects to it. It is a, injection.
It's your own blood.
It's an injection, so there's that issue. But the risks are very, very minimal. And you've been dealing with a very long time, and it sounds like you've done everything right. So I would seriously consider it and see if that's an option for you.
Yeah, sounds good. Thank you very much for calling, Kurt. Appreciate your call. We have more callers online. Let's go to Karen in Neshkoro next. Hi, Karen. Thanks for calling.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
I'm calling because I periodically have problems going up and down the stairs with my ankle, and I can't even tell you if it's only one ankle or if it switches because it's that intermittent. But it's like it locks, and I thought maybe it might be arthritis, but maybe it's something else, and is it something I should check? I bet I haven't had it for a month now, but I go up and down the stairs multiple times every day.
So when it locks, how do you get it unlocked?
I don't do anything. It just stops after a while.
So,
and I, it's like I can just go down the stairs, in that funny way you do when you can't bend your foot. And then it goes away, and it isn't come back for a long time. But it
it does, when it happens, it hurts, and that's why I don't force it, I guess.
Have you ever had an injury to your ankle, either of your ankles?
Not that I'm aware of.
All right. Well, you probably know. Are you kind of loose jointed? Are your joints loose in general?
I don't define loose for me.
Well, like wobbly or unstable at all?
I don't think of them as that way.
Okay. And when this happens, does it hurt?
Yes. That's why I don't, then I go down, you know, one foot at a time.
Okay. Well, there are a couple things. It doesn't sound like it's instability. You could have some arthritis where you have maybe a loose body or a loose flap of something that gets caught in your joint, but typically there's a trauma associated with that. The other thing that sometimes happens is you have something called a tarsal coalition, where you don't have enough movement in part of your foot, and so you can, you know, catch part of your foot elsewhere because that part of your foot isn't moving like it's supposed to. But other than that, you know, usually a locking is the result of a loose body in your joint, something floating around, getting caught, and then after you move, it moves out of the way. But those are usually associated with a trauma of some sort.
Right,
so.
Right. It's a little unusual. Yeah.
So, yeah. You know, given how intermittently it happens, and, you know, if it's not happening on a regular basis, I think you could expend a lot of time, energy, and money trying to chase this down, trying to figure out what it is.
Right. I would only be concerned if it starts happening with increased frequency,
right,
or if it's...
You can't get it unlocked.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate it, Karen. Lane in Billington, it's your turn.
Hello. I'm having some back pain between my spine and right scapula, and arm pain basically in the triceps and down into my elbow. I'm seeing a therapist, and he's doing a dry needling technique. I'm curious as to the efficiency of the dry needle technique.
Okay. I can answer that because I dry needle myself. I don't dry needle me. I perform dry needling. And just for our listeners out there, what dry needling is we use acupuncture type needles. It is not acupuncture. What we're looking for are the trigger points or those kind of knots in your muscles. And what we do is we take the needle and we kind of tap at that trigger point and hope to, I use the analogy of just kind of blast it, just kind of break it up.
Hmm.
So that's kind of the theory behind dry needling. Unfortunately, there's very little research out there because it is such a new technique. There have been a couple studies that have come out and shown that it's effective when added to a multifaceted treatment program. I will tell you anecdotally that my athletes get tremendous relief from it. They come back and ask for more, which I think is a little odd if somebody wants me to put a needle in their upper trap, but they do get good relief from it. So the theory behind it is you're kind of breaking up those knots in the muscles. Now, you still have to get back to the underlying question of why do I have these knots in these muscles in the first place? Am I overusing this muscle group and underutilizing another group? So you still need to perform proper corrective exercises to make sure you're using your muscles appropriately.
Mm-hmm. So, Lane, are you getting some exercise as an adjunct to the dry needling?
He's starting me out slowly on exercising and stretching those muscles.
Great. Sounds perfect.
Yep, it's a great idea.
Yeah. Thank you very much for calling.
That's great to bring that up, up that topic. Thanks.
Yeah.
Tom in Milwaukee up next. Hi, Tom.
Hi, how are you?
Great. I appreciate your call. What can we do for you?
Well, I've got a tremendous problem with Achilles tendon, tendonitis, and plantar fasciitis due to an antibiotic I took in January called ciprofloxacin.
Yes.
And I'm seeing a physical therapist about it, doing my exercises, but I've had this for 4 months, and I've been limping for 4 months. Any idea how long this is supposed to last?
Oh, boy.
That's a great question, and you're kind of what we call a zebra. It's very unusual for this to happen, but there is research showing that with this antibiotic that one of the side effects can be an Achilles tendinopathy. Have they tried to put you in a boot and completely immobilize you? That's the first thought that comes to mind for me.
Well, I wore a boot for about a week, and they keep telling me that wasn't long enough, and I understand, but my job kind of prevents me from wearing that all the time. I'd kind of be out of work for 3 weeks. So it's the right foot is much worse than the left. What was unusual was the left foot really didn't start hurting until about 3 weeks after I was off the antibiotics.
So what kind of work do you do, Tom? Are you're on your feet all day?
Well, I'm a sales guy, but I'm in different factories and stuff walking around. So I'm wearing steel-toed shoes.
Yeah.
So wearing a boot doesn't.
Right.
Right. And you're walking on cement. So, you know, that comes back to the very beginning of the show where we talked about variables. So he's got a tendinopathy. The plantar fasciitis may have come with it or come as a sequelae. The other foot may have come because of compensation for the index foot or, you know, however you want to look at it. But your lifestyle of having to walk around on a cement floor in hard shoes is gonna set you back. So everything you do in therapy to help yourself get better, you know, for the hour, if you do an hour of therapy a day, is set back by 8 hours of walking around in steel-toed shoes on a cement floor. So in terms of how long it's going to take you longer.
Right.
Longer than it might take someone else just for that reason. So I don't like to be the bearer of bad news. So have you tried a night splint?
I am. I've been wearing a night splint in both feet for about 3 months.
Okay.
Isn't that fun?
Yeah. Yeah, I know.
We're horrible.
Yeah, we've both been there. But I'd stick with that. And during the day, do you wear a heel lift in your shoe?
I am wearing
an orthotic.
Orthotics, and I'm trying different ones.
Great. Okay.
To see which ones give me more stability.
Yep.
I've got kind of a swollen area on my right foot right around my ankle bone.
Okay.
And, you know, so when I pull my toes back, you can feel this lump kind of stick out next to that.
Oh, a nodule? Yeesh.
Yeah. I've kind of been fighting it with this for a while.
It sounds to me like you're doing everything right. I mean, you're making as best accommodations as you can at work. You're sleeping in the night splints. I would continue to do that. And as Lori said, I think it's just going to take longer because of the demands of your job. And you just can't get away from that. Your Achilles just never get a break.
Yeah. And I know you have the steel-toed boots. And it seems to me that there are options in those kinds of steel-toed work shoes, that there's more than just the boot. There might be another shoe type. And you might talk with somebody at a specialized shoe store or a podiatrist who might know about other kinds of shoes that fit the criteria that you need for being in your work environment but are better for your feet.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
Certainly worth asking, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Thanks, Tom.
Yeah, it's a tough problem.
Good luck. Joel in Marshfield up next. Hi, Joel. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. Say, I'm going into my fourth year with a loose hip implant. It was done by the VA, and now finally they're going to redo it for me. And I'm wondering what your thoughts are on if there might be any kind of difficulties being loose in there for so long. The implant is actually supposed to cant inwards, and it's actually pointing to the outside now. And I was wondering about, you know, what kind of recovery should I expect, and will there be any kind of difficulties or your thoughts on that?
Well, anytime they do a revision, you know, we usually kind of delay the rehab a little bit longer, wondering why the revision is done. Here, it sounds like your components are loose. So the good news is the physicians probably won't have any difficulty getting them out, which is sometimes part of the problem. So they might slow you down a little bit and make sure that you have really, really good fixation with your components in your bone before they let you be very active. But I would expect the rehab to be very similar, just probably prolonged maybe by time and a half.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's a ballpark.
Yeah. Yeah. Are you symptomatic now? I mean, you're having a lot of symptoms from it?
Oh, I've been limping like an old dog ever since it was done. I don't know why they've held off so long. I've had bone scans, CAT scans.
Okay.
The x-rays indicate, you know, a loosened zone and loosening, but finally they're going to do it for me. And I'm wondering, since that thing's been so loose in there so long, what kind of, you know, if there might be
difficulties that way, or
probably not.
No, well that's good.
Yeah,
that's good news.
Yeah, and you might find that you feel a lot better when they get it fixed.
Very happy.
Well, that's the hopeful result, anyway.
Exactly. Indeed, indeed.
And Joel, good luck with that, and thanks so much. Once you're out and after the fact, give us a call a few months down the road. Let's check back in with us and let's see what's going on. Thank you. Tom in Wausau called and wondered if you have any advice for runners who have pain in their lower back. So you're a runner and you got lower back pain.
Well, I guess the big question is, why do you have back pain? So, you know, if you saw a physical therapist, we'd come in and we'd examine your back mobility. Do you have limited mobility? What's your underlying posture? Are you too curved in your back? Are you too flat in your back? Or do you have a scoliosis? We look at your hips, see if your hip heights are the same. If you have a pelvic, you know, obliquity or a pelvic rotation, one that's shifted one on the other. Are your leg lengths the same? Do you have hip flexibility? So basically, we need to find out the cause of the back pain, because it wouldn't be normal to have back pain when you're running.
Right. And then on top of that, after we look at all those things, we'd look at your run, because it may be that you're overstriding. If you take really long steps, that requires a lot of rotation as well as a lot of extension in your back. So it may be that just changing, not your speed, but actually how many steps you take per minute may help with that as well. So there's lots of things we can do statically and dynamically that could help him out.
Right. So if your back is stiff and then you're overstriding, you're really loading some segments of your back. One of the things we've learned from the barefoot runners, you know, the people who said, I have so much less pain when I run barefoot. You know, maybe it has to do with being barefoot, but one of the things we do know is it has to do with how they change how they run, and that is they take a shorter stride.
Right.
And so if you look at it mechanically, a longer stride is going to move your base of support farther from your center of gravity, and it's going to put more load on your spine. So just shortening up your stride, if you're a runner or if you're a walker, a lot of times with back pain, can make a big difference in how you feel.
Shoes make any difference?
No,
I have somebody who, you know, says, all right, every 500 miles I change my tennis.
Well, the life expectancy of a shoe is a little bit different than the shoe type. And yes, most people say you can get about 400 to 500 miles out of a pair of running shoes and that you should rotate them. And that is probably a reasonable thing to say.
But it's probably not going to lead to our one way or the other to back, lower back.
Well, if you're running in really worn out shoes that have lost all their shock absorption, it could definitely be a contributing factor.
And much of it has to do with the change in loading on your joints.
Right.
It's not that necessarily the loss of shock absorption in and of itself, but it's the change in the loading on your joints. So you're now putting more load on your joints because your shoes aren't taking as much of the load.
Well, we have covered a whole pile of you two have covered a
whole
pile.
You brought in your Synvisc and your knee. That's right.
I did get some help in there. and we have, of course, we're always third Monday of the month, so June 15th is next time around.
Excellent. Sounds like a plan.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Larry.
Really appreciate it. Jill Tyne-Nissenbaum, Associate Professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy Program at UW-Madison. Lori Tyne-Brody, physical therapist, athletic trainer with UW Sports Medicine and Spine Center. We really appreciate having them, and I'm sure they'll be back. Tomorrow at 11, we have a special rebroadcast for you of a great show. We learned about new advances in brain cancer diagnosis and treatment, and also about efforts to prevent blindness. Great shows. You listen in, and please stay with us now. Lots more in store here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.